Sinister, and I'm delighted to be introducing Trevor Stockman today, most especially as he almost didn't make it here, having got such a fault yesterday in Turkey. So Buddy is an anthropologist who both gained his PhD from and taught at UC Davis, and is now working in Ankara as a lecturer, as well as being affiliated with an ERC project called Pastoralism, Uncertainty and Resilience, or PASTRIS, or how do you pronounce that?
PASTRIS, this one, yeah.
Is exactly. He's been focusing on issues related to pasture cheesemaking in Kars, northeastern Turkey, and is currently working on a book on that topic. What I find fascinating about his work is the way he interweaves the regulation of cheesemaking with broader politics and the science that both informs and these days might actually challenge the standards and regulations of cheesemaking. His current research, which is equally intriguing to me, is focusing on the politics surrounding transhuman pastoralism and multiple cross-border relations it involves. You can understand why I'm interested in Buddy's work. So, with no further ado, I will pass off. I think Buddy will be giving a paper entitled, if you haven't changed the title now, thank you, Pasturing Dairy Technosciences in Northeastern Turkey.
Thank you. Thank you very much for this introduction. So I add only a subtitle, Carving Knowledge Through Pasture Cheese Diplomacy, which hopefully will become clear once I start presenting. But before I do that, I brought some cheese for all of you.
We're going to be talking about cheese, so that's what I heard.
Okay, I'll start my timer. Okay, so thank you very much for joining me here today. It's it's a pleasure for me to be here. And thank you, especially Sarah Green, for inviting me. So it's really exciting for me to be here and to share part of my dissertation research today. And it's also part of my book manuscript. And I'm almost also particularly excited because I somehow came across with the works that probably many of you are also engaged with here, including this cross-locations approach and all this, excitingly new project RESET, which is very very much in line with what I'm also interested. So I'm very much excited to share my work here and to hear your feedback. And so I will mostly read my paper. I have actually worked on it. And it will probably last around 45 to 50 minutes. And I hope that I will be reading it in such a way that you will also be able to follow me. So, and before starting, I also want to mention that today, actually this exact day, is the 17th anniversary of a very sad event for us in Turkey. An Armenian journalist, Hrant Dink, was killed, assassinated actually, 17 years ago in Istanbul in the middle of the day, in one of the busiest streets. And this presentation and my research is actually about Kars, about the Armenian-Turkish border. And it's a very important city for the Armenian heritage as well. So I think it's important to remember and commemorate his assassination as well. That's how I wanted to start. So I will start the presentation with an overview of what my dissertation research was about so that you can actually make sense of this particular part of the research. So I will briefly introduce the research in general. No, it's not this one. Okay. So in my dissertation, I focus on a basically nascent collaboration between dairy farmers and a group of dairy scientists engaged in certification processes of local artisanal cheeses. But my dissertation emerged from my voluntary involvement in a small village association in Kars in northeastern Turkey, which is called Boğatepe Çevre ve Yaşam Derneği. Boğatepe is the name of the village, and the association is called Environment and Life Association. And this association is made up of small dairy farmers whose livelihoods rely on animal husbandry for cheesemaking, basically. And their association was founded in 2007, and I met them for the first time in 2009, so way before I started my PhD. And the women that I met in the village, who are actually making the most members of the association. They were interested in making a better life in the village in order to make Boatepe, the village, habitable for their kids. So in year 2024, now today, it's a huge discussion if the village is habitable for them or for their kids. And I would love to kind of talk more about that later on. But I wanted to start with the acknowledging that actually it's their organization and whatever they have started to do in 2000s, which made me to motivated to study in rural Turkey and in this particular part of the country. So this is the outline of my book manuscript, which is very similar to the outline of my dissertation. So as I said, the dissertation basically focuses on the collaboration between dairy farmers and the group of dairy scientists. And I look at the certification processes of local artisanal cheeses. So I look at, in particular, two cheeses. One of them is the one that you are actually tasting, Gravyer cheese. And the other one is Kaşar cheese. And these are the two trademark cheeses of this particular region. Although how much they are local or traditional, it's a huge another discussion. So how far they go back in the history, it's a huge another discussion. But in my research, I was very much interested in two different, so I have two different parts. The first two chapters and the last two chapters are kind of speaking to somehow two different, I would say, branch of bodies of literature, maybe. And the geographical boundaries that these certificates attempt to define are deeply entangled with the contentious political borders and military spatial boundaries in Kars. And I was interested in how artisanal cheesemaking and its more than human relations have compelled unanticipated engagements with the settler colonial histories, agropastoralism, ongoing militarization of the ethnopoliticized boundaries in this particular part of the country. And my dissertation explores how cheesemaking has served as an unexpected agent to remember the shared violent past, circumvent the speciality of the state and the boundaries. And it also makes new places and communities through material practices of dairy production on pastures of the northeastern Turkish borderlands. So this particular place, to give you a bit more of an idea of the location. So Kars is located in the northeastern part of the country, as you see on the in the bigger map. And these two more particular maps are showing you the change of the nation-state boundaries in the 1920s. And the group of people that I work with, they are mostly actually the ones who migrated from the other side of the border after the new border actually emerged after the First World War and after the Turkish Republic was an independent country in 1923. So I have been dealing with many stories about this highly politicized border between Turkey and Armenia. And this border has been closed since 1993 due to political disputes about between the two countries, mainly over Armenian genocide and also Azerbaijani-Armenian wars that actually keep happening in different ways since then. Recently, with COVID, the situation has changed a bit, but still the land border is closed. Kars also constitutes the northern part of the predominantly Kurdish-populated region of Turkey, or which is also called Northern Kurdistan, where the armed conflict between the Turkish army and the Kurdistan Workers' Party has been ongoing for more than 30 years. And this conflict led to the militarization of the region, which consists of many unofficial and yet highly recognizable boundaries between the state and the PKK, as well as between different communities under various ethnopoliticized identities. So the boundaries that the cheese certifications aim to draw are enmeshed with this speciality of the armed conflict and the implementation of many military arrangements, such as the declaration of security zones, pasture bans, surveillance of pastoral movements, and instituting armed local guards, koruculuk, and assassination of big landowners. Yet different boundaries have been drawn by the settler colonial dairy farming of the late 19th centuries and early 20th century, nationalist appropriations of pastures by the immigrant Turkish and Kurdish communities after the 1920s, under the Turkish Republic, and the legacy of multi-ethnic pastoral livelihoods in these borderlands. So based on my 18-month research, my dissertation examines how these contentions and contradictory spatial boundaries are made by and through artisanal cheesemaking and dairy farming in Kars. I follow encounters between farmers in their efforts to reorganize animal husbandry and cheesemaking, which I call dairy arrangements usually, under new certification processes that open up a space for politics of remembering, differentially shared histories of war, violence, and immigration. So this is mostly the chapter 1 and chapter 2 of the dissertation, if you look at the titles. On the other hand, I also focus on the emergence of more than human communities of dairy farmers, scientists, cows, pastures, milk, and microorganisms in the laboratories, as well as in rural artisanal dairies. And I argue that the certification processes, which detail the criteria needed to achieve the distinction of a place-based cheese, require making new connections in the designated place of production. Hence, through practices of pasturing, milking, and artisanal cheesemaking, as well as remembering, collaborating, producing scientific knowledge on living microorganisms of artisanal cheese, my dissertation analyzes the possibility of making hopeful and even thriving life in a borderland, otherwise laden with memories of war, militarization, and depopulation. So having said all this, I hope that it will give you a bit background on why I'm going to be talking about this carb reasoning in dairy technosciences. So this is another slide that I'm not going to go over so much. This is about the Swiss dairies, which I tried to actually locate through archival material, and then I visited some of them. And this is a more contemporary picture where you can find the abandoned dairy. And the other one is a picture at the beginning of the 20th century where the many different Swiss, Kurdish, Turkish, Greek, and Armenian families were actually collaborating in different ways. So it's not a very harmonious and peaceful always, but it was a very interesting combination which doesn't exist anymore for the most part. So these are basically some of the important concepts that I try to actually use in my work. That's why I thought that a slide on them would be also useful before I continue. So pastures have always been fundamental for dairy farming in Karst, where farmers and their herds, they reside in high altitude, which is 1,700 to 2,600 meters, grasslands that are covered with snow during the harsh winter conditions for 6 to 7 months each year, which probably most of you are not that much unfamiliar with. From April until October, animals are fed in the open-air pastures according to different regimes of management in different villages. And this is a form of agropastoralism that is called mera hayvancılığı in Turkish. And mera means pastures or commons in Turkish. Yet it's a bit tricky since fields farmers cultivate are also pastures until farmers seed them in June. So after they harvest in late July or early August, they also become again commons, although they are actually private fields. So in that sense, commons and private fields, it's not very easy to define in English. So we have to maybe specify. But in the first two chapters, as I said, I discuss more the historical transformation of the use of pastures and the arrangements of mera hayvancılığı or agropastoralism in Kars. On the one hand, this form is similar to the wider Mediterranean, where historians and social scientists have studied different forms of transhumance. On the other hand, the particular history of Kars, where the wars between Ottoman and Russian empires, especially in the 18th and 19th centuries, and the 40 years of Russian rule between 1877 and 1917, which is an unusual history for Anatolia, for the rest of the Anatolia at least, have shaped agropastoralism in different ways. So in addition to the movements of people and animals due to the shifts of nation-state borders in the 20th century, Swiss cheese dairies that were established in Kars pastures gave way to a special heritage in the region, which is the cheese that you actually were able to taste. Kars was the province of the Turkish Republic with maximum number of dairy animals and largest space of pastures until 1990s. The legacy of Swiss cheese making and the pasture dairies, which were fundamental for this commercial dairy production, are discussed in the first two chapters of the book or the dissertation. And I'm not going to go into details about these parts, but I want to highlight three points that are connected to the presentation somehow and that might be maybe useful to keep in mind. The first one is that the pasture dairies, they have also a close connection with national securities. So Turkification politics of the border territories were implemented through the spatial boundaries of pastures, since the patterns of dairy farmer and animal movements became a way to intervene in the boundaries between different ethnic communities and their alignments with the nation state throughout the 20th century. So the pastures and the pasture dairies or agropastoralism is not only a way of life that is not necessarily attached to the state, but it's not only that it is intervening intervened by the state, but also it intervenes the way in which the state might actually take a hold in this particular place. Secondly, these pasture dairies are crucial for agropastoralism as they organize the dairy production. During the pasture season, small dairy farmers use the pastures to graze their animals, mostly cows, and they sell their milk to the dairy owners. This exchange and the speciality of it, the seasonal movements of herds and farmers, they have shaped most of dairy production. hence animal husbandry in pastures, or agropastoralism, or mere hayvancılığı in Turkish, have affected the possible dairy arrangements, which are embedded in a larger system that can be broadly maybe called agropastoralism. And lastly, although pastures have shrinked in the last 40 years in Kars, their existence have been crucial in the protection of the biodiversity of the region, as well as in the continuous dairy production, which is still the principal livelihood strategy for most of the people who live in this part of the country. Okay, now let me switch to the actual paper, which will be mostly about understanding what I tried to say about the pasture cheese diplomacy and this collaboration between the scientists and the cheesemakers that I've encountered. It was a sunny Tuesday in the first week of July 2018, a few days before the start of the Anatolian Cheeses Meet in Kars Festival that was going to be organized in the Boatepe village, Kars, the northeastern border province. Villagers were preparing to host more than 30 artisanal cheesemakers from various parts of the country. I accompanied Ilhan and Shehnaz during their visit to Ilhan's then recently constructed dairy. Shehnaz, a PhD student in food engineering, works on microbiology of milk. As part of her dissertation research, she analyzes lactic acid bacteria in Kars kashar cheese in order to develop a starter culture that can later be commercialized. She had contacted Ilhan and asked for his support in collecting whey samples from his dairy. Ilhan had invited her to visit the village and the dairy during the festival. While we were walking in between old copper vats covered with the stainless steel facades, Shehnaz explained that her research aimed to analyze the thermophilic lactic acid bacteria in the whey, which, according to the dairy scientists, are among the microorganisms that are crucial for cultivating the taste and texture characteristics of the kashar cheese. She stated that her research would hopefully result in meaningful contributions to large-scale cheese production, as it is the case in most food engineering departments. Her main contribution with the invention of a starter culture would be to enable cheesemakers to have a standard kashar cheese that does not variate according to the seasons or microbial compositions of the raw milk. Ilhan answered Shehnaz and stated that the traditional cheeses are artisanal products, which reflect the conditions under which they are produced. So in his words, cheesemakers use techniques to shape the natural world into a cultural product. And these are his words, shape the natural world into a cultural product. That is called cheese. So this process cannot, or rather should not, be independent from the daily circumstances. Then he added that he would be glad to contribute to Shehnaz's research and emphasize that its importance for him and other cheesemakers who are eager to learn about the scientific definitions of the microbial world in the pasture cheeses. However, the expected outcome of Shehnaz's dissertation research, he said, may posit a threat to the small-scale artisanal cheesemakers in rural Kars, where cheesemaking is a craft that depends on a web of relations among pastures, cows, small farmers, milk, and cheesemakers. Unlike the small rural dairies, or mandıra, or zavod, as we call it in Turkish in Kars, or Kars Turkish, rather, zavod is a Russian word, actually. Unlike the small rural dairies, industrial dairy factories rely on various technologies that aim to standardize milk and cheese by rendering the source of milk, craft processes, and daily conditions almost irrelevant to the production process. Starter culture is one of the fundamental commodities for the factories, since it enables the operationalization of pasteurization technologies in the production of standard cheeses. Rather than using raw milk, or rather than using milk, to obtain the curd, industrial cheesemaking process starts with pasteurizing the milk, so using pasteurized milk. Pasteurization minimizes the risk according to the food safety measures, since it kills the bacteria, the pathogenic ones, that are classified as harmful for human health. But it also kills most of the other bacteria that are crucial, or that may be crucial, for the cheesemaking craft. Once the milk is pasteurized, the starter culture is added to provide the particular bacteria that can work in the curd to make the cheese. Hence, with the use of starter culture, dairy factories depend much less on the daily conditions of dairy farming or place-based microbial flora of the milk that would require particular craft processes as practiced in most mandıras, in most dairies, in villages or pastures. Shehnaz's research aimed to replace the widespread starter cultures in industrial dairies, which are usually imported bacteria batches in Turkey. with a new one that would make any kashar cheese into Kars kashar cheese. Yet İlhan objected to this reasoning and suggested that adding bacteria cannot localize cheeses. On the contrary, he argued that this would ensure a standard cheesemaking process that no longer depends on the particular local conditions and knowledges. It would make milk and cheese placeless. So this disagreement between Shehnaz and İlhan epitomizes the main concern of this presentation and most of my research as well, namely the collaboration between artisanal cheesemakers and scientists as they engage with local cheese and its dairy technosciences in Kars. Artisanal cheesemaking emerged as a crucial site for farmers in their attempts to sustain rural livelihoods by certifying local cheeses as authentic products whose distinctiveness needs to be scientifically proven to the official food safety authorities. The studies that I focus in this part of my research provided the required scientific analyses for the certifications, such as the geographical indication of Kars Kashar cheese and Boatepe Gravyer cheese. So this is the kashar cheese that I'm talking about. And these studies revealed the limits of the conventional dairy science research, focusing on the recent collaborative processes of dairy science and crafts that made new connections and boundaries between pastures, dairies, laboratories, scientists, and cheesemakers. I analyzed the ways in which these processes have altered dairy scientists' agenda, research agenda on artisanal cheesemaking, and also destabilized the epistemic boundaries between scientific and traditional knowledge. I argue that the pasture cheeses enable a diplomacy that leads scientists questioning the conventional approaches in dairy science research on traditional cheeses. Recent attempts of situating microbial ecologies in Kars cheeses, while following the recent trends in global microbial research, point both to the new aspirations that emerge from the collaborative processes and to the limitations in designing and practicing research in rural Kars and also different universities in Turkey. So I'm interested in the ways in which cheesemakers' concerns can sneak into the scientific research, become interwoven with the concerns of the scientists, and challenge the conventional practices of knowledge production on kashar or Kars cheeses. Place emerges as a crucial variable in these collaborative research practices that seek to analyze and distinguish pasture cheeses from industrial and or standardized placeless cheeses. Pastures mattered for dairy sciences and crafts in designing research on and implementing technosciences in Kars cheesemaking. And this is the Gravyer cheese that you have actually tasted. This is the actual, the whole wheel, which weighed about like 50 to 80, sometimes 90 kilograms. And so I brought you a small slice. Collaborations between dairy scientists and artisanal cheesemakers have recently been more visible, especially in the local food production circles and its technosciences. Scientists, as well as cheesemakers who are trained in dairy sciences, have been influential figures in many conferences and documentaries. While recent scientific studies on artisanal cheeses target controversies behind the black boxes of the food safety regime, various civil society organizations and artisanal cheesemakers associations have also been promoting new safety measures to protect traditional methods through different certification mechanisms. So here I refer to the discussions that happens in the United States, in Wisconsin, in Vermont, like there are many publications by Donnelly, Kinstead, Percival, and there are also a huge discussion, especially around slow food circles, I would say, and also many different parts of Europe, where all these food safety regimes have been discussed and challenged by traditional artisanal cheesemakers. Cheese as a food heritage has become a crucial tool in various development programs through its reinvention on heritage arena, as Christina Grasseni calls. And another anthropologist, Heather Paxson, conceptualizes post-pasteurian micro-biopolitics as a grid of intelligibility for humans to understand the world of microorganisms beyond the sum of particular isolated strains to be controlled or modeled in advance. Microbial communities are dynamic in this microbial materiality that the practitioners collaborate with. This approach provides a fruitful lens to analyze the innovative dairy science research simultaneously with the government of the encounter between humans and microorganisms as food. So that's why I'm trying to understand this, that's how I'm trying to understand this particular collaboration. And I think my research contributes to these debates by investigating the making of Kars cheeses as a food heritage through pasture cheese diplomacy, that encompass negotiations between state institutions, farmer collectives, scientists, development experts, various advocacy groups, as well as designing and conducting research on cheeses in dairy sciences. Pasture cheese diplomacy also reveals the political nature of more than human life in cheese. Non-human agents like cows, pastures, microbes come into play when the scientists they attempt to understand microorganisms, their communities, the environments that make microbial life possible in this particular local cheeses. Technoscientific concern of standardization in dairy production is accompanied with cultivating an attunement to the ways in which standardization may pose a threat to the small dairies and rural livelihoods of pasture cheese making. Yet, none of these, so neither the attunement nor the food safety problems, can be abandoned. Hence, the collaborative research practices on local cheeses reveal the material politics of pastures in dairy crafts and sciences. Maybe here I should also stress that this particular paper that I'm reading you some parts of it is going to be published in the in an edited volume called Materialization of Politics in the Middle East, with a special focus on Turkey. So scientific studies on concrete forms that the milk takes throughout the process of its transubstantiation have long been shaping the dairy production and practices of cheese making. Together with the industrialization of milk and dairy production in the late 19th century, technosciences have been introduced in various aspects of the cheesemaking craft, especially in Europe and North America. Food scientists and cheesemakers, as different kinds of experts, have collaborated and disagreed on various techniques and technologies of the dairy production processes. Pasteurization might be considered as the most famous technoscientific controversy that has been enforced and formalized by many nation-state regulations, as well as supported and challenged by many cheesemakers and scientists. In other words, pasteurization is a field of expertise that can be endorsed or challenged by scientists themselves, as well as adopted and rejected by cheesemakers. It is a prime example of an abstract scientific knowledge that is black boxed. If you want, it's Sage, Nessel, or also we can refer to Bruno Latour in terms of understanding how black box in scientific knowledge works. In such a way that pasteurization as technoscience hides all the inherent disagreements and uncertainties inherent to the material processes of curdling milk and knowledge production. A few particular heating and cooling processes, defined as pasteurization in dairy sciences and some legal documents, have become a mandatory practice in most dairy production sites around the world. The use of unpasteurized or raw milk in dairy production, as the common practice in traditional and most artisanal cheesemaking, became subject to additional food safety criteria and more scientific research. If you look at the situation in Turkey, according to the National Milk Council of Turkey, only between 40 to 45% of the total raw milk production ends up in formal dairy processing. And 57% of this portion is processed by the small dairies. So more than half of it is not actually formally processed, and more than half of what is processed in these small rural dairies. These mandiras are mostly seasonal production sites in rural areas of the country. They operate when the milk supply increases significantly in spring and summer months, since a significant portion of dairy farming in Turkey still relies on extensive grazing on pastures, or what is called mera hayvancılığı. Most of them are located in highland pastures or villages nearby the pastures that are used by herds of dairy animals during the pasture season. The usual setting involves collecting milk produced by dairy farmers in one or a few villages around the mandira, around the dairy, and most dairies process less than 10 tons of milk per day. Their overwhelming presence is considered as a sign of backwardness for the dairy industry in official reports and other publications, in which dairy scientists have highlighted the lack of proper sanitary conditions, advanced technologies, and standardized dairy production in the dairies for many years. So similar to the rest of the country, the dairy production in Kars is also dominated by these small dairies. More than half of the registered production sites are located in villages and operate seasonally. Kars province, with more than 380 villages, is located in the northeastern part. As I said, neighbors with Armenia, and also a small part is neighboring Georgia. So pastures have been fundamental for dairy farming in Kars, where farmers and their herds, they reside in these high altitude grasslands. Despite the high percentage of dairy production in the rural dairies, legal regulations of food safety concerning dairy products does not make a distinction between these small dairies and large big factories in Turkey. When I met İlhan in 2009, he was already an active supporter of traditional cheese production and commerce across various regional, national, and international networks. His struggle against the imposition of the industrial standards, he told me, emerged as a necessity, especially after 2004, when the Turkish state, as part of its EU candidacy process, legalized new food safety requirements that officially banned the dairy production in small dairies, which did not satisfy hazard analysis and critical control point requirements, which is HACCP, or HACCP as we call it usually in Turkey. In the last 20 years, most rural dairies in rural Turkey were either shut down or confined to the informal markets in provincial marketplaces or small dairy shops due to the inspections, fines, or high cost of the required renovation processes. The state inspectors, most of them are graduates of food engineering or veterinary faculties, referred to the conventional dairy science studies, which informed the food safety regulations. So this situation has started to change in the last few years. I would be happy to talk more about that in the Q&A if you are interested. And in most conventional dairy science publications, the traditional cheeses are considered risky, if not dangerous, for human health when produced in rural dairies, devoid of necessary hygienic conditions like easily cleanable surfaces, stainless steel equipment, technosciences like pasteurization machines or milk analyzers. The bulk of the conventional dairy science research on traditional cheeses in Turkey consists of laying down the physical, chemical, and microbiological properties of a particular type of cheese based on the analyses on the samples randomly collected from the local markets by the researchers. They evaluate the risks for human health posited by pathogens identified in the studied samples. The proposed solutions are usually concerned with the amelioration of the conditions of dairy production in small dairies in order to ensure their conformity to the international industrial standards. And with the standardization of the products that can achieved by the use of pasteurization, homogenization, or starter cultures. So when İlhan complained to me about the implanted reasons of the scientists, which I will talk about in a minute what he meant by it, he specifically targeted these conventional studies he has encountered throughout these years. So production permits issued by the state and different certification mechanisms consist of an organization of paperwork and an appropriate food production process. Inspectors of any such audit mechanism work with particular checklists that are assumed to rely on scientific realities about food safety, health, and nutrition. And scientific knowledge is black boxed in these lists, like the forms that pasteurization can take in the dairy craft procedures. When scientific expertise materialized in a technoscientific intervention is implanted in the dairy craft, it challenges the resulting cheese and its variations while transforms labor processes and relations, both human and non-human. İlhan's search for collaboration with scientists, as well as inspectors, technicians, and engineers, entail accommodating local dairy craft practices within dairy science research, not simply as a place of origin or as a craft to be modernized, but more as a necessary site of place-based practices that feed scientific abstractions while producing cheeses. So now let me go back to the opening anecdote to unpack the conceptualization that he uses, this cheesemaker İlhan, implanted and carved reasoning to elaborate on a diplomatic proposal to the collaborative research practice. So when Shehnaz explained to İlhan that using a starter culture would save him from worrying about the effects of the daily circumstances on the taste of each batch of production, or food safety measures that favor pasteurization, İlhan's unwillingness to be part of the scientific study on developing a starter culture of Kars kaşar cheese became even clearer. And he said, "I always say that there are two types of scientists. The first type practice implanted reasoning, koyma akıl in Turkish, and the second, carved reasoning, oyma akıl." And this particular categorization also applies to the social scientists, so it's not only about the people who are interested in non-humans. The first type of scientist, according to him, thinks that whatever they learn at school is the ultimate truth that can be applied even universally. İlhan emphasized that the implanted reasoning relies on the knowledge that serves the industrial technologies and large-scale dairy factories, and it labels small farmers as culturally backwards, economically inefficient, procedurally unhygienic, and industrially incompetent. This reasoning can only offer solutions that neglect the actual needs of small farmers, their families, their animals, pastures, and immediate surroundings. Hence, the results of knowledge production on the basis of this kind of reasoning usually exterminate the traditional techniques developed in particular places under specific natural and cultural circumstances. And he concluded, I quote, "Your starter culture can do the same to me, to my people, my animals, my pastures, because it is not what we really need to make life better here. We rather need to improve our understanding of how we produce this particular cheese that we already produce. I need you to tell me what else I can do to take care of pastures, cows, milk, or cheese, so that the microbes you will see under your microscope will thrive in the way the cheese asks from them. And this is not a job, this is a job only the second type of scientist can do," unquote. So the second type of scientific reasoning, which he called carved reasoning, according to him, makes use of the available scientific knowledge produced and circulated in academia, but also takes the extra scientific know-how, such as tradition or artisanship, seriously, so that the actual problems of the practitioners could also be addressed. Carved reasoning, then, implies an attunement to the specific circumstances the respective scientist might encounter. An attunement that not only allows the reconsideration of the scientific knowledge that is supposed to be universally applicable, but it also requires a practice-oriented knowledge production process. Such attunement can only emerge from the very process of thinking and doing with the local practitioners. For him, this approach implies that a local issue could be solved with the participation of local actors whose extra scientific knowledge should be taken seriously, and it also points to a place-based characteristic of a particular reasoning process that should also take into account seemingly unrelated concerns, like the aim of sustaining livelihoods under the same daily conditions that characterize milk and cheese. In other words, carved reasoning cannot be detached from the local conditions, actors, practices, so it must be placed. And İlhan's claim for a distinctive contrast between implanted and carved reasoning sheds light on different ways in which scientists engage with the local knowledge of pasture cheesemaking. On the one hand, cheesemakers like İlhan expect from the scientists to respect and be open to learn from the traditional methods of the cheesemaking craft in pastures. This approach required, first and foremost, not imposing their scientific knowledge as the only barrier of the right way of milk processing that usually contradicts and most of the time threatens the characteristics of small-scale pasture cheesemaking and the whole world that emerges from it. Instead, it entails to articulate artisanal, local, and scientific knowledges in order to carve out a solution to the existing problems of the practitioners, i.e. cheesemakers who strive for sustaining certain quality standards and a unique taste that distinguish their pasture cheeses from industrialized ones while satisfying food safety requirements. So I consider İlhan's concept of carved reason as a diplomatic proposal in the search for a collaborative research practice. So I will try to give a sense of how I use the term diplomacy. And then, since I'm already behind, I will try to give you two of my cases instead of three. In her Manifesto for Slow Science, Isabel Stengers challenges the sharp opposition between questions defined as scientific and those that should be left to politics, or rather to ethics. For scientists to reconsider the boundaries of their scientific research questions and expertise, Stengers' call to slow down science suggests the figure of a diplomat. And Stengers stresses that the expert does not preempt what kind of destruction it can bring to the non-expert. In contrast, the diplomat is aware of the obligation of thinking with other ways of knowing that can be undone due to the expert knowledge. And I also put there the quote that I take from her book, where she also explicitly refers to the slow food movements. I'm not sure if she really means the slow food, but she definitely means people who are actually trying to organize around food, probably. So the scientists should cultivate an active, concrete awareness of the very special and demanding character of their knowledge, and the way its reliability depends on the distribution between what they define as mattering and what can be ignored. acquiring and maintaining such a concrete awareness as a condition for the capacity to enter into new relations takes time. And this may be the true challenge here. For scientists educated in modern research institutions, whatever requires slowing down mobilization amounts to a distraction, a diversion from the scientists' one true mission of advancing knowledge. We thus need the same kind of deep change that slow-foot movements propose. So Stenger's figure of the diplomat considers possible distractions expert knowledge may bring. Her concept of diplomacy in slowing down of science involves specific and dangerous ways of weaving relations. This process is never an innocent nor a harmonious one. Yet it transforms each protagonist, I quote her, it transforms each protagonist's relation with his or her own knowledge, hopes, fears, and memories, and allows the whole to generate what each one would have been unable to produce separately, unquote. So this conceptualization has been inspiring for me to think with the encounters between dairy scientists and artisanal cheesemakers in Kars. The latter's primary concern is that the conventional dairy science research neglects the expertise of rural cheesemakers and contributes to the destruction of the pastures as a necessary site of dairy farming and cheesemaking. Borrowing the concept from Stenger's, I conceptualize Ilhan's concern as a diplomatic proposal that can enable dairy scientists in Kars to consider the destruction of pasture cheesemaking and the everyday livelihoods of agropastoralism in rural Kars while designing and implementing their scientific research. And the resulting collaborative practices of knowledge production, or thinking, making, doing processes, to call it in a better way, culminate and materialize in the pasture cheeses. As the cases that I will talk about, I hope, demonstrate, pasture cheese diplomacy involves a material politics of pastures in making cheese and dairy science research. Okay, so it's already 40 minutes. I have probably 15 more minutes. So 55, is it too much? Like, how are you doing? Okay. Now I will talk about another veterinarian, Canan. Trained as a veterinarian, she's an associate professor in the Department of Food Hygiene and Technology in Kafkas University in Kars. And in fall 2017 and spring 2018, she allowed me to attend her classes on dairy processing and technologies. Probably I have another slide for her. Yeah. Okay. So in her lectures and during our conversations outside the classroom, she never hesitated to state that a factory setting is always much better than small dairies in terms of hygiene, health, and efficiency. Yet when I asked her questions about the microbial world of raw milk and microbial diversity of traditional dairy products, she did not hide her ambivalent feelings. While she acknowledged, as an eater, that a well-made pasture cheese usually tastes much better than the industrially produced ones, she insisted that she would not consciously choose to eat pasture cheese as a food scientist, because she just simply couldn't. Even if her own work in the laboratory demonstrated that the pasture cheeses are much richer in microbial composition, and especially in microbial composition that is beneficial to humans, she still argued that one cannot trust them, since they always risk containing pathogens. As part of an unpublished research she conducted with her PhD advisor on traditional dairy products, Canan isolated more than 9,000 colonies of microorganisms from the samples collected in Kars pastures. And she stated her amazement at the microbial diversity she encountered in these traditional products. Yet she was very much disappointed by the manufacturing conditions that she encountered, and the sensorial effects as well. She usually found them too salty, stinky, ugly looking, although they taste really good. Canan's laboratory analyses identified many strains of bacteria known to be pathogenic, such as Escherichia coli, Brucella, and in these samples, which she associated with the primitive production conditions. Since her main research interest was probiotics in dairy products, and more specifically bacteriocin capability of the lactic acid bacteria, she was interested in isolating the strains that are known to be beneficial to the human health. And the ultimate aim would be, she explained to me, to make these microbial cultures available for factories that process milk according to the modern hygiene standards and that can make use of these cultures to produce probiotic dairy products. Canan's firm belief in the necessity of the replacement of small rural dairies by large-scale dairy factories does not leave any room for her collaboration with pasture cheesemakers, besides collecting samples for her research. As she also confirmed, her research does not result in any collaboration with rural cheesemakers unless they are willing to adopt industrial technologies and modern food safety standards. Hence, her approach is in line with what Ilhan calls implanted reason. While her research focuses on the pasture cheeses as the source of microbial diversity, her way of abstracting the knowledge of this diversity in her experiments does not go back to the pastures. Her expertise rather edits out space by abstracting it, as Rafaeta calls. It is destined to the development of new biotechnology products that can be sold to the dairy factories. Scholars like Maria Fonte have already shown cases in which local knowledge of small farmers is appropriated by companies which industrialize small-scale artisanal production of local food. And Canan's research points to a similar risk of expropriation of the cheesemaker's local knowledge by scientists and companies. Her expertise does not take into account the implications of her practices of knowledge production, which contributes to the destruction of the existing everyday worlds of cheesemaking in pastures. And this reminds me very much of what Stengers was understanding from the figure of the expert. Such biotechnological innovations risk substituting rural dairies, artisanal cheesemaking, and small-scale cheesemakers with urban factories, industrial dairy production, and workers in large-scale production sites, which might be also called pasteurizing dairy infrastructures. When pastures matter in the dairy science research, what happens? So Canan's approach to scientific knowledge and expertise is in sharp contrast with another process of dairy science research designed by a well-known food engineer in Turkey working on traditional cheeses, Nuray Güzeler, and her PhD student, who is actually probably about to complete her dissertation by now. So I met Professor Güzeler for the first time in Kars when she attended the International Symposium of Artisanal Cheeses in Turkey and in the world in 2016. And she had explained to me that she was very excited to meet Ilhan in a conference back in 2014, especially because as a small cheesemaker, he was interested in scientific knowledge not to scale up his production, which is rare, she said. Her remark revealed that it is not only the artisanal cheesemakers who are looking for like-minded scientists to collaborate, but also careful dairy scientists are looking for artisanal cheesemakers to produce knowledge together. And this reciprocal concern is crucial for a collaboration that can lead to carved reasoning, or maybe better put, carving knowledge. When Güzeler expressed her interest in designing a research on Kars kaşar cheese during a conversation with cheesemakers in 2016, she consulted artisanal cheesemakers and listened to their concern that could inform her work. Concerns that are usually not answered in the scientific literature, she stressed, because the latter is more concerned with the solutions for the large-scale production in the course of industrialization. The narratives of the cheesemakers who distinguished pasture cheeses from the industrially produced ones highlighted the use of pasture milk and artisanal techniques in rural dairies. According to Güzeler and her student Kaboeva, who designed a research which would reveal physical, chemical, microbiological, and sensory characteristics of cheeses that are produced at different altitudes in different seasons. Since pasture milk is produced between May and August in Kars, the research was designed as a comparative study on the cheeses made in April and in July, so spring cheeses versus summer cheeses. Moreover, cheesemakers explained that the production in a few larger dairies, which are located in the organized industrial zone, are situated near the city in Kars, and they may breach traditional methods used in smaller rural dairies. So Güzeler and Kobayeva taught and translated this into a comparison of the altitude. While the higher altitude samples of the mountain cheeses were collected from the small dairies in the pastures, so in small rural dairies, and the lower altitude samples of plain cheeses were collected from the relatively larger dairies, which are located in the organized industrial zone. And these translations and the resulting research design was carved out of a collaborative process that addressed the concerns of both the artisanal cheesemakers and the dairy scientists, while also challenged the conventional dairy science research that would not problematize the distinctiveness of pasture cheeses among other Kars kaşar cheeses. The researchers wanted to collect samples from three different batches of cheeses produced in consecutive weeks per dairy and season. and 24 samples from 4 dairies, 2 in Boğaztepe village and 2 others in the organized industrial zone, were shipped from Kars to Adana, where these 2 scientists were located. The chemical, physical, and microbiological analyses revealed that all cheeses produced in July had distinctive properties, which can be explained by the use of pasture milk after May. So, for instance, chemical analyses suggested that the dry matter and fat in both mountain and plain cheeses are significantly higher in July than in April. In another significant aspect is that both mountain and plain cheeses were found less bright in texture and more yellowish in July than in April. And pasture milk affected the chemical composition of the milk in all the production sites. It transferred the yellowish color from pasture flowers and grass, and the cheeses became more opaque than lower humidity level during summer months. Okay, I'm not going to go over all the details of the research. I'm just going to skip this part. And the microbiological analyses also identified some important differences. Both total aerobic mesophilic bacteria count and the total lactic acid bacteria count turned out to be higher in April and lower in July for the mountain cheeses, whereas lower in April and higher in July for plain cheeses. So in other words, mountain cheeses' microbial count decreased when the pasture milk was used in the summer, while it was the opposite for the plain cheeses in the organized industrial zone. While the higher counts in July can be explained due to the increased temperature during the transfer of milk to the dairy for the plain cheeses, mountain cheeses' higher counts in April can be considered parallel to the pasture cheesemakers' arguments about the distinctiveness of their cheeses made between May and September. So in the month of April, the animals, they barely start to be on pastures, and the grass they eat is very humid after months of winter and snow. And this, according to the farmers and cheesemakers, affects the cow's digestion and often gives them diarrhea and causing a particular animal scent and taste in the milk, in the shed, and also in the cheese. So making kashar cheese taste much bitter than it should be. And not only the results, but also the explanations based on the characteristics of pasture cheesemaking contributed to the artisanal cheesemakers' struggle in unraveling the distinctiveness of their kashar cheeses. It also enabled dairy scientists to offer a new approach to the traditional cheeses, beyond focusing on pathogens in them or possible biotechnology products that can be developed from them. So this research, according to these 2 scientists, offers clues for further future research on the divergences between attitudes and seasons in kashar cheese, especially on the transformation of the microbiological ecologies in pasture cheeses, which begs for a more detailed research over a longer time interval. And collaborative research practices suggest new ways of studying place-based distinctiveness of kashar cheeses and their microbial worlds, while providing techno-scientific interventions to the practitioners of cheesemaking. So pasture cheese diplomacy then emerges from the process of collaboration between scientists and cheesemakers who cultivate a concrete awareness of each other's concerns and let this awareness shape the scientific studies on an artisanal know-how, scientific studies on the cheese and on the artisanal know-how of these cheeses. Hence, pastures matter for dairy scientists and crafts as places of dairying. So I'm going to try to end this presentation by going back to the research that I've started with, Shehnaz's research. So I skipped the pasturing, this particular slide, where I kind of touch upon more global discussions about post-pasteurianism and the belonging of microorganisms. Can they belong like the cheeses belong to a particular place? And I will kind of end up this whole discussion with the Shehnaz, who was actually doing her dissertation research when I was also doing my dissertation research. And her and I, we collected together some whey samples. And these whey samples, after the raw milk, after the milk was coagulated in different dairies in Kars, we were taking some samples. And then I was sending the samples to Shehnaz, where she did the research in Van, which is another province in Turkey in the eastern part. Her research practices aim to develop a starter culture for kashar cheese, as I said, out of the thermophilic lactic acid bacteria that she identified in these particular samples. And she explained to me that after isolating different strains from the samples, she would select the ones that are more suitable to be reproduced as starter cultures. Once she decided the possible selections, her starter cultures were expected to carry the distinctive taste of Kars kashar cheese to the cheese that is made from pasteurized milk. According to Sheikh Naz, this would contribute to a definitely healthy dairy product, thanks to the pasteurization, and to a generic standardized local kashar cheese, thanks to the locally sourced starter culture. So Ilhan objected to this affirmative contribution claim by arguing that such a research may serve to the industrial producers more than the artisanal cheesemakers. He stated that the need to use starter cultures in pasteurized milk to achieve standardization is an implanted truth claim by the conventional dairy science and industrial factories. Yet he agreed to provide samples to Sheikh Naz due to a few reasons, because I was curious and I asked him, why are you still actually in the research if you think that this is not really good for you? First and foremost, Ilhan believed that a starter culture could not substitute the microbial composition of cast kashar cheese made from the raw unpasteurized milk. So basically, he didn't believe that a particular starter culture would actually happen to, you know, reproduce after the research, which he was actually right. And secondly, he said that the young scientists like Sheikh Naz, who are genuinely interested in understanding the microbiological composition of traditional cheeses, are crucial people to collaborate with for artisanal cheesemakers. He firmly believed that both sides can inform each other with insights that the other one lacks. Last but not least, he also believed that this collaboration could potentially affect Sheikh Naz's approach, since she might realize some of the artisanal cheesemaker's concerns in the course of her research. And more than 3 years after this encounter, Ilhan turned out to be right. Not only that Sheikh Naz's attempt to develop a starter culture almost failed, but also she modified her research agenda in order to include another variable, the altitude that she thought was irrelevant to her study before her visit to the village. So as I said, Sheikh Naz visited the village when the association had the yearly cheese festival in 2018. And that year, the festival was entitled Anatolian Cheeses Meet in Kars, and around 50 small cheesemakers from different cities in Turkey convened in Boğatepe village with their cheeses. The tasting workshops brought together wheels of Kars kashar cheese from 35 different producers in Kars and Ardahan provinces. And the five-day festival enabled Sheikh Naz to meet many artisanal cheesemakers who have their small dairies in rural Kars and different parts of rural Turkey. At the end of the festival, towards the end of the festival, when we spoke with her about her research, she told me that while her academic interest has always been influenced by the rich microflora of the raw milk and dairy products, her main focus in research concerned the particularities of food safety and standardization. None of the starter cultures I can make by the end of this research can reflect the diversity that exists in the pasture milk, which is constitutive of the cheeses, unquote. So she expressed that her scientific expertise in revealing particularities of the biological diversity in artisanal products could be brought together with the expertise of the cheesemakers, their traditional techniques and knowledge. So while the focus of her research, the commercial starter culture, did not change in the 4 years following her trip, she aspired to develop a research agenda within the same research, a second research agenda within the same research that takes into account the different origins of the samples she collected. So for each sample, we started to register the altitudes of the pastures from which milk came. So although we were getting it from different dairies, we were registering the altitude of the pasture that the actual milk was coming from. So her hypothesis was that in the course of the study, she collected whey samples might reveal possible nuances in the dominant lactic acid flora within the milk, produced at different altitudes in the different parts of the province. So this would enable her to provide a list of thermophilic lactic acid bacteria she encountered in different samples according to their altitude, even if these would not be possibly reproduced in a starter culture trial. So in other words, the database that she has been creating in parallel is a larger set that would not only include the strains that are not considered suitable for reproducing as a starter culture, but would also reflect microbial cultures of pastures at various altitudes, which shape and are shaped by the cheese as an environment and in a particular place. So Ilhan and Sheikh Naz considered this component of Sheikh Naz's research as an important step in the collaborations between scientists and artisanal cheesemakers in Kars, which contribute to the differentiation of pasture cheeses from large-scale industrial producers standardized with the help of commercial or not starter cultures, which have the potential to be carved and alive scientific materials. Hence, pasture cheese diplomacy in Kars paves the way for enacting practices of dairy crafts and scientific research practices, scientific research in pastures, dairies, and laboratories. And pasturing technosciences is part of a larger process of infrastructuring pastures for dairy production. So if you allow me, I also want to read the part, the conclusion part, so that I will close this paper properly. Collaborations between dairy scientists and artisanal cheesemaking have materialized in a wide variety of local dairy products in Turkey. Especially since 2018, there has been an increasing public interest for traditional cheese production and consumption. Many festivals, non-scientific publications gave way for new collaborations between food engineers, microbiologists, development officials, and dairy farmers, and new cheese-making facilities have been founded in different several locations across the country. So all of these recent developments suggest that new forms of collaborations are being made, and further ones could be on the horizon, and new diplomatic relations between different experts, and new possibilities for carving knowledge in dairy technosciences. So as the studies I described today have shown, expertise in dairy science posits new research agendas when it is open to the concerns of artisanal cheesemakers and the everyday worlds of dairy farming in pastures. Paying close attention to the ethical concerns embedded in the web of relations among pastures, animals, milk, curd, cheese, dairy farmers, and cheesemakers makes diplomacy possible through pasture cheeses. Yet this diplomacy is not only slow, but it also does not offer any guarantees for supporting pasture cheese making through scientific analyses. As almost all cases described in this chapter indicate, scientists also face many challenges along the way of cultivating awareness about the possible implications their practices might bring on pasture cheese making endeavors. In this academic context, one obvious fact is that conforming to the conventional dairy science research is always safer to get published and to maintain one's professional reputation and status. Whether the scientist in question can access and utilize the technological tools needed for conducting alternative microbiopolitical protocols that progressive dairy scientists, such as Marie-Christine Montel, for instance, is another challenge that needs to be kept in mind. Not having an equipped laboratory in Kars dedicated to the artisanal cheesemaking, or the lack of DNA sequencing machines in many provincial universities in Turkey, also compound the strength of the persistence of Pasteurianism in dairy science research. So meanwhile, the boundaries between Pasteurianism and post-Pasteurianism, or implanted and carved reasoning, can get blurred at various instances, as I also described in this particular presentation. Yet together with the nuances and unintended consequences or intentions of various scientific research agenda, the collaborative practices in rural Kars and the pasture cheese diplomacy they enact carve out a place for co-construction of scientific and local ways of knowing and dairying. This diplomacy, rather than suggesting a recipe for preserving and sustaining artisanal cheesemaking, simply suggests a starting point for slowing down scientific knowledge production, while it simultaneously alludes at the potentials of cheesemaker-scientist collaboration in pasturing dairy technosciences and circumventing the ongoing transformations of dairying in pastures, which also means infrastructuring pastures for dairy production in a new way. Thank you for listening.